Well, Jay, I don't know about you, but I'm feeling a little cooped up here. It's time for a move, I think. Get some space, some bigger yard, that kind of thing. What do you think?
You are really going to move? But that's a big deal. Like, you can't do that in your...
It is a big deal.
You're scared to even leave your living room.
What seems like a big deal moving isn't when you use the right people. You can use these sell your own home situations where you're bartering with a guy in your driveway for 45 minutes and you end up selling for $3, or you can use a professional that makes moving actually simple. Who are we going to use?
But the problem is, obviously, Tom, but my worry is, like, you're so far, you're in Orleans.
Tom will come to Orleans, he'll go to Russell, he'll go to Clarence Creek, he'll go to west of the Westy Village, wherever it is out there. He'll go anywhere for you and make that experience that you were talking about of nervous or a lot of work, make it seem like nothing. Bastion and Ferguson will literally smooth out the easiest move of your life.
Wow, even in Orleans, I just can't get over that.
Yeah, once you hit 10th line, 11th line, 14th line, he's still coming. He's driving in his brand new Dodge Caravan, carries his family around in, will sell your home. That's what I'm looking for, an easy ride with Bastion and Ferguson. Look them up. He's going to sell you quick and easy. Christian Jack, you're having a kickabout on a soccer field at a cottage. All of a sudden, a black bear comes charging at you. Who do you want with you? Who do you want with you? Jason DeVos or Stephen Caldwell?
Wow, what a way to start, fellas. It sounds like pretty two good bodyguards, but you're making me pick, right?
Yeah,
of course.
Wow. I think probably, Stevie. Because I might have a chance of outrunning him, so then the bear would get him.
Fantastic. Great answer. Okay, I love that. I love that. Steve O'Kane, soccer snob number one. It's midwinter. Brutal, brutal snowstorm. You're finishing up shoveling your driveway. Your neighbor is just walking out as you're walking in. Does your head go down and you go in the house, or do you help him?
Oh, that's the worst. That's worse than than you just asked Christian. Oh, I have to help. I have two good neighbors on either side. My last place, there was one bad and one not so. So it would depend. I'd put my head down.
Yeah. All right. Jay, this is a hungry belly question for you, Jay. I know you're going to like this one. You're driving to Alaska. You're starving. There's a service station coming up. The next one is in 500 miles. The only restaurant there is Taco Bell. Do you stop? Do you stop or do you go 500K?
So the Taco Bell?
Taco Bell. Full of gluten. Full of gluten.
I don't care. I suffer through it because for my family. And I did it for you guys. I remember being on PDL trips and like, oh, Jay is the only place to stop. Pure gluten, pure diarrhea. Right. Thank you.
Welcome to the Soccer Snobs episode 14. Special guest today, the kind of guest that you can only get when you're on episode 14 without getting canceled. Can you cancel a podcast? I don't even know if you can cancel a podcast. But anyway, Christian Jack, welcome. If you don't know who that is, be ashamed. Hit pause, give your head a shake, and come back. He's a soccer not a soccer analyst, the soccer analyst for TSN, originally from Birmingham. Big Villa fan, correct?
That's right.
Wow.
Been covering soccer for over 25 years, and a lot of that has been in Canada. to score for 10 years. You worked your way up from an intern, I believe, right? Is that true?
Yes, that's true.
Wow. Yeah, and he's become one of the most trusted voices in Canadian soccer. Views and opinions, analysis, literally second to none. We were talking about that before you came on. We're delighted to have you on the show. Thank you for coming.
My pleasure. Thank you for being on the show. I didn't know it was number 14, but that's a special number for me as well, because that's my son's favorite number. It was his birthday recently on the 14th, so he wears 14 on the back of his shirts all the time. So wow. Good number to pick. There we go.
Look at that. Well, we're going to start you off. You're an MLS expert, okay? You covered
it. I'll try to be.
Yeah, okay. You're an MLS soccer snob. We'll anoint you that then.
I'll take that. Thanks, boys.
The salary cap in MLS. In theory, it's a great thing, so clubs don't overspend, go bust, create parity, all those good words. Is it working? And if so, can we do that in Europe? And should they do that in Europe?
Wow, yeah, it's a really good question. I think it is working to a degree. The one thing that doesn't really work is transparency, and fans just want honesty. And we've got a salary cap, but it's not like a salary cap where, you know, in the NHL, for example, they'll give you a hard number, whatever it is, 81, whatever it is. And you know that you can't go over that. Now, there's certain ways you can go about that by signing players on the IR, whatever. But when in Major League Soccer, there's all these other areas where even the most, you know, avid fan or the people who follow it as much as we do, we don't really know exactly how much allocation money they've accounted, where it goes here, where it goes there. And then you get into other areas where you can sign players and put some of that percentage of the transfer fee into that. And some clubs do that, some clubs don't do that. So, you know, I don't know whether people find this fascinating or boring. I think there's one or the other, you know, it can be. Yeah. So it is working to a degree. Major League Soccer, has to be said, is a league known around the world where even in this COVID climate and they're struggling to generate revenue because there's rarely any markets with fans, that we know there's no precariousness about it. We know we're not going to wake up in the morning and go, Major League Soccer's done, it's bankrupt. You know,
yeah, so that's why I'm wondering, you know, could Europe adopt a similar model? I mean, is it even in the realm of possibility that the Premier League or something would have something like this?
I mean, I don't think it will be, Mark. No, I just think, you know, I think the fence is open and they've bolted away. You know, I just don't think we're ever going to be able to gather them back in and put them back in that pen. You know, I just think right now there's just, you know, we're already talking about, I know the big teams breaking away at some point. The Super League's been talked about for decades, you know, God forbid us that doesn't happen. You know, but it's just, I just don't see that. You already see the big teams arguing. There was a report recently where John Henry of Liverpool owner said, why am I got the same amount of votes as the Huddersfield owner? You know, there's already this big, the arrogance, so to speak, that they can generate, some clubs like Manchester United can generate £5 million per match day when you got 75,000 full Old Trafford. And I just don't think they're ever going to go there. You know, it's hard enough as it is getting these clubs to do what they're told when they're within the rules that are pretty lenient right now. Manchester City. So for them to get to do this stuff now, I think it'd be really tough.
Yeah. And it's, I the way I think about it, it's almost like protection from the big owners that come in from all over the world. Like, is that dangerous for some clubs to have these big, rich foreign owners come in, play around? And what if they just kind of jet? Is that a dangerous thing? I don't know enough about it, but I figure.
I think so. Yeah, I think so. I mean, look, I would just use Manchester City there as an example. You know, I grew up in the northwest of England, and the majority of my mates were Liverpool fans, Manchester United fans, and occasionally Man City fans. And, you know, being a Villa fan, you know, they're Man City fan, and they were always kind of connected with me a little bit because you always looked up to Liverpool and Man United. Like, we're never really going to get there. I think Man City fans always admitted that, but there was always that special connection to their club. Now they have completely changed that. They have completely turned that around. They are a Goliath. They are an enormous team that can win trophies, that can maybe win the Champions League one day, get the best players on the planet like De Bruyne and Sterling and those guys, and have Pep. You know, and I'm sure all those fans, or 95% of those fans, would say, "I don't want anything else. This is what we always dreamed of."
Yeah.
But at the same time, I'm sure there's some fans that have said the connection to Manchester has gone away, and my example of Manchester City is an extreme one because they've translated all of that to success. There are other examples, many of them, where clubs in Europe have had owners come in and done you know, taken away everything of the culture of that club and then ripped out the heart of the club and also not also won games. So, and it led to relegations, Blackburn Rovers, there's many of those examples. So, you know, I think it's one of those where you, if it's going to happen to your club, you could only dream, okay, maybe you can take us to the next promised land. But other than that, you know, the disconnect from the club itself is a difficult one to swallow, I think, if you're a long-term season ticket holder.
I think the connection's a great point you make there. I've looked back at some different things. Like I've seen like some articles or not articles read about like in the 1900s, newspapers were talking about the same thing, like 1904, like yeah. All of a sudden someone's on 2 pounds a week and how can we ever keep up? And then you look again in 1950. And so things can be all relative. It does feel a bit at a point where maybe some of these are like super conglomerate type things coming in. I would agree with you, not to butter you up as the guest here, but I think culture and identity is a key thing. Like if you do come in and you can somehow keep that, it's not a bad thing to have them in there, but it does. Are we at that point? Are we at that breaking point where it's not all relative anymore? And maybe a cap or some of the transfers like they've tried, and it, I guess Man City don't have to abide by those rules, but those are some important points, but it could be all relative, and it could be a conversation we're having in another 100 years.
Yeah.
I guess financial fair play was meant to kind of do that, right? But that's even more topsy-turvy than the salary cap in the US, isn't it? Like, is there any rules to that? I mean...
Yeah, I mean, I actually think it's been a pretty good thing. You know, it has definitely done what it's supposed to have done. And, you know, I guess when you pick up the tin and it says what it says on the tin, you know, for the most part, you know, it's done what it's supposed to have done, but you know, it's like anything, you can find ways around it. You know, there's a lot of cross references in terms of ownership groups where, what do they own? Okay. They own the entire club. Now they own the stadium. Then they can put money into the stadium, but it's not really, there's lots of areas that these people find ways around. So, you know, it's at the end of the day, you can only just, I guess for a football fan, you've got to always have a, you know, it's always about winning, but you've got to have that internal debate. I've always said this about whatever club you follow, do they meet the morals and values of what you meet in terms of your life? And if they don't, are you willing to swallow that just for the beauty of success and entertainment? Or do you have to stand for something more? And I think to Stephen's point, you know, more and more, I think the way the game's going, more and more of those conversations are going to have to come up. I think most of the fans, particularly the fans in the UK, will say, you know, we'll just say, okay, well, it's fine. We'll just keep going. But I do think there will be people who will stand up for more about it and say, no, we don't want to be represented by this country or this ownership group for what they portray and what they have to do in their own land.
Yeah. So speaking of fans and culture and that kind of thing, do you think there's a correlation to these crazy results we're getting and all these goals we're getting and the performances, the fun matches we're watching to no fans in the stadium, whereas there's no pressure from the players, you know, for the players, from the fans, there's no teams that feel like they have to sit now. You know what I mean? Like they're just kind of playing with more freedom. Is there any correlation there? Or am I insane?
I think there is, Mark. Yeah, I do. I think even from Toronto FC's point of view, we're here talking about this game. They played a game against the Red Bulls this week where, you know, they are in control of the game for a little bit, then they lose their energy and they've played a lot of games this week and then the energy drops and you just know that if there's 30,000 people at BMO Field, they're going to go, come on, let's go, you know, and push them there. So there's a way, I think, of looking at these games, and I'm hesitant to use it, but they are a bit like glorified training games. You know, like they are a little bit like that. You guys are all in the sport. You might know even more than me. You know, you're coaching. You know, that emphasis of the crowd is so important. And there are some players that I've met during my time broadcasting that would say they don't need that, that they are centrally focused on their ability to get the best out of themselves and the club. And then they step over the white line, they're programmed, and that is their only thought. There are others, and you guys know this at any level, that go over there and they need that kick up the backside. You know, they need that. And they can't always come from the coach. They need that when a ball's played over the channel and the centre-back runs across and he's got a little bit of a step ahead of the forward and he takes his time up and the crowd gets on him. He's like, you can't do that again.
Yeah.
You know, you can't do that. Oh, the crowd senses danger and then they represent, they hear the danger and they have that internal ability inside going, I can't do that again. The crowd's going to be all over me. Well, now they're not doing that. So they're like, well, I got away with that one. Maybe I'll get away with the next one. And that leads to more attacks, I think, and leads to more goals. And it certainly led to what has been a remarkably unpredictable Premier League season so far in the first 4 weeks.
Yeah. By the way, Mark, you set him up perfectly to rip you down. You said, or am I insane? And he agreed with you. Last week, I asked Vic to do something into one of his calls, and I said, or am I an idiot?
I saw it, yes.
He came right out and nailed me. I was like, Mark, I'm
That was fantastic. There's not a better sound bite than that, right? With the...
Yeah, you're not going to get any better sound bites than that, Mr. Bouncer. Did he even give you make the final or anything? At the
he
end
didn't give it anything, but the way he said you're an idiot was like a call unto itself. So it felt like now I have something.
Yeah. Hey, you'll always have that, right? You're called an idiot by Vic Rauta.
I will say, though, with the, you know, the stadium sound, the ambient noise, as a fan, like a true like student of the game, and I love coaching and I love teaching – I love hearing, if I get a sound of the coach yelling at a player in a certain moment, I'm like, oh my God, you don't hear that, Jenny. So, you know, it's, I'd rather have the fans, but as a fan, like a true fan, I love hearing what they're saying to each other, how they're getting, you know, getting on each other for little things. Like you hear Walker yelling at someone in there, or, you know, in Liverpool, I heard Van Dijk yell at someone. I was like, oh my gosh, inject that in my veins. Like, what is he saying? Like, this is amazing. Like, you know, I'm telling everyone in the house, shut up, like, make it quieter. Like, I want to hear exactly his accent, you know? So do you find that, you know, even yourself, like, obviously you love the game. Like, do you like that part of it, or are you like totally get the fans back?
No, I'm completely with you, Jason. I completely agree. So when there's an option sometimes on certain broadcasts of Premier League games to listen to stadium sound or organics, I'm not listening to that other stuff. I just want to listen to stadium. I just want to go in for your reasons that you just so eloquently put. I'm with you. It brings more of an identity to these people. And then obviously if you can hear some of the coaches' instructions as well, that's really important, particularly for you guys, because obviously you can learn things from that. You know, I've always been in a privileged position on our Major League Soccer broadcasts to be in between the benches, so I can often hear that myself when I'm down there, even when there's 30,000 people at BMO, so I can hear that. But when we did the MLS's back tournament in Orlando, I don't know if you're aware of this, but sometimes you could hear like a lot of like cursing and swearing from some of the coaches, so we had to put that thing at the beginning saying viewer discretion is advised. And one game we actually left, you're supposed to have people actually just like kind of mute it out and things, and then in the end we tried that, but one game we left Greg Vanney open the entire half because we were doing an interview at the end of the half for him. So I don't know if you remember it or saw it, but that was the one game when everybody was writing down everything that Greg Vanney said, you know, and like you could hear him at one point shouting to his team saying, you know, if we lose the ball here, we're effed, you know what I mean? Like, you know, so that got a lot of people's reaction because obviously people can hear what their connections are to the players. And it's something that I've always been used to down there and really enjoyed. And particularly if you're the winger or the fullback playing right next to your coach on that half.
That's the worst.
You always know you're going to get a bit of a verbal. I always think like if that left back there is just coming up and down there, if he gets asked to go switch on the other side, like the fullbacks do for TFC sometimes, he's just like, whoo, take a bit of a breather. Like, I'm as far away from the coach as I can now. Before I was right next to him. So.
Yeah, that's hilarious. So being between the benches, actually, now that you've had that privilege for so long, who's the loudest coach in the MLS?
Wow. I mean, well, I wasn't between the benches this year, just to tell a story, just because on the games I was 10 rows back. But Thierry Henry, I took a few videos while I was there and didn't realize basically anything Thierry Henry you post, videos or quotes, anything is a big time consumer. Like people just blow it up. So I took a few videos of Thierry's reactions after some plays at BMO Field, and that was very unusual to see. People will love that stuff. So Thierry's obviously very different as well. There's quite a few coaches, you know. There's those. The most entertaining ones for me are the ones who develop a relationship with the fourth official. So they're just chatting away the entire time, just trying to get edges all the time. You get some who just sit back, like Bruce Arena's very melancholy and just sit back on his bench and just doesn't do very much. And then you get some who just the entire time are standing up and being, you know, very, you know, outspoken. And we've had a lot of referee confrontation with managers and overseas ones who come over a lot and don't last very long. And there's been some good stories there for sure.
Now on the Thierry, Mark, if you don't get mad at me, but I have to ask this, because Thierry Henry, when he's in the broadcast booth, like I can listen to it for hours, the way he explains the Barcelona and how Pep helped him and Arsene Wenger. Yeah. And with you too, I'm not trying to butter you up, but when you speak, like, I used to be such a true soccer snob. Like, I'm the biggest prick on here, for sure. Everyone will agree. And so when I was listening to some other people talk, I'm like, what the hell are they talking about? Like, when you spoke, you came at it, and I was like, this guy is nailing it. And we all agree. And we did that before, like, you came on. Like, we agree. And I bet everyone listening, if they truly listen to you speak, like, you nail it. Do you think you'd have the bollocks to become a coach? Do you think you'd be able to? Because Gary Neville tried it. Henri's trying it. They're very knowledgeable. Like, when they speak, I'm like, everyone listens. They retweet what they're saying. They're bang on. But what's the difference of you knowing that and then getting in front of a change room?
Question. Well, first of all, thanks so much for the kind words. It generally means a ton to me, you know, to get that kind of feedback from three guys like you, and with your backgrounds and your connections to the sport. I really truly mean it. I'm very humbled by it. I mean, for me to be coaching, it's just never something I've ever thought of. I just always thought it was beneath me, to be fair, in terms of it's just not something that I don't feel like people would respect what I have to say. So, I mean, ultimately, I just don't think that, I think that level of coaching and that connection that people can coach to, I just have so much time and respect for those people. I just think that would be just something like, wow, is anyone really going to really listen to me? You know, I mean, Thierry Henry, Gary Neville, accomplished stars, you know. So for me, I mean, I've always been fascinated by evaluating players and helping coaches. I just felt that, you know, I always considered, like, I'm the little guy, you know, like, I'm happy with that. I'm the little guy that can sometimes complement a broadcast, hopefully, and bring things together from that journalistic point of view. You know, I try to connect to people like yourselves, but also people that have had that 9-to-5 job Monday to Friday that love the sport so much and haven't had time to read all week about it, or, you know, for me to have relationships that I've developed over the years with players and coaches and general managers that I can then bring that inside information. And, you know, you'll notice I occasionally sprinkle my own analysis and opinion in there. And that's kind of something that I'm allowed to do now. And luckily some people respect it. Some people don't, and that's fine. Yeah. And I think that, you know, for me, you know, I always sit in a position where I'm most often next to an athlete who's played the game. You know, I didn't play the game at a high level, and I understand that. I think there's a role for both in the modern day broadcast.
Yeah.
But I never want to try and be that person that played the game. And then, you know, people that, like Jason and Steven, the way we started the show off, I couldn't have asked for two better guys to sit next to in terms of learning from them and being very respectful for my role. And, you know, I've learned a ton from them, you know, and I think the way we blended in and together as a partnership, I think was good. And it's nice to hear people enjoy it. But to answer your question directly, Jason, I just think if I was to go that way, I would actually do what I do now, which is, you know, a ton of preparation and a ton of background before I felt comfortable going into that. And then, if I do, I'll take each one of your phone numbers and call you and spend hours talking to all three of you so I can learn a little bit more.
Brilliant.
Speaking of something new, the Women's Super League. We've been talking a lot about that lately. It's on a lot, and I'm really enjoying it, actually. Yeah. And so with that said, do you think the MLS will follow suit in terms of having a women's team for every club, just like they're kind of doing in England for the most part, not every club, but for the most part? Can that transition over here at all?
I really hope so. Yeah. Why can't it? You know, I'd love that to happen. You know, Major League Soccer will probably, I think they will probably get there eventually. The women's game is, you know, truly underdeveloped. There's a lack of respect for it, unfortunately. Agreed. Around the world. And, you know, having covered the 2015 Women's World Cup here in Canada, you know, I can speak from experience of traveling across this wonderful country of ours and seeing firsthand what those games meant to those people. Not only the people who played them, but there were people in the stands, you know, you name it, any age, any color, they're sitting in the seats enjoying, you know, professional high-end women's soccer. And it's truly remarkable to watch, you know.
Yeah. I asked Stephen Jay this question last week. Do you, being a Villa fan, now are you a Villa women's fan? Do you transition from the team you are with, or do you find a new love?
Always. No, always. It's Villa till I die every way. You know, no doubt about it. It's a league I want to watch more of. Now we have more access to it here. I will. You know, I'm not going to lie. It's not a league that I have right now to be able to watch every game because I have, you know, I watch all the English Premier League games because of what I have to do for work. I do a Monday night SiriusXM show in the States around the English Premier League. So I watch all of those games for that as well. Major League Soccer games as well. You know, people, you know, you ask you what you kind of watching. I'm watching Alfonso with Bayern Munich because I have to. There's Jonathan David with Lille now. And then the women's game. So there's only so many hours in the weekend to be able to try and do that. And then MLS starts again midweek. So, you know, I'm trying to watch as much as I can. But I'm thoroughly delighted to see that the games are being broadcast on the national network, that it's accessible to people on the normal sports cable package. And, I want to get behind it. And the other thing I would say is that, you know, I would love to get to a point where, you know, the women's game is covered by women and men.
Yeah.
And the men's game is covered by women and men as well. And it shouldn't just be men talking men and women's talking women's, because as we're all saying here, women will enjoy women's soccer and men's soccer, and men will enjoy women's soccer as well as men's soccer too.
I think it's like a good thing and a bad thing. The teams in Europe starting, and it seems there's more emphasis, like you said, Mark, in the women's league, and obviously the English game's throwing money into it. Bringing Alex Morgan over to Spurs is a massive coup for them. The shame part for me is I feel like you've already got a good women's culture in North America, like American players are superstars. Canadian players, Sinclair, these are superstars of the sport. For them to have to go over there now, like, I don't think they actually need that. I wish there was a team here. I know they have their league, and it'd be nice if it connected with the MLS and had more backing. Like, we were just looking today, Christian, at an article that came out in the paper in Ottawa, and it was listing about 8 or 9 girls, I think, from Ottawa that are overseas playing pro. There used to be a W League team here, you know, like they used to have an option and something to do here. And now they're off Tenerife and all these amazing places, great experience. But, you know, we already have that here. I don't want to lose that from the women's game because it's been the opposite issue on the men's side. Right. So,
yeah, great point. Yeah, it's a great point. And it's the unfortunate area that we're in Canadian soccer. Right. I mean, I've been here almost 20 years now. And, you know, the game has grown unbelievable in 20 years, but where we're at now is we're producing our own talent, and then we've got to figure out where we're going to put them. And to your point, you know, the best part for the men's players is to go to Europe, that environment, and the women's game, maybe not if we're able to do something quickly and build that infrastructure. Yeah. And the thing I've been consistent about the women's game for a long time. I'll say it the same again. I said the same again about 10 years ago. I don't feel like they need to mirror anything in the men's game to be successful. They have a blank canvas to do whatever they want. So why do they have to do a UEFA Champions League if they don't want to? They could do a World Champions League. And why couldn't they have, like, organizations popping up all over the world? And you could even have a Canadian team, and they don't have to have Canadian players in it. Say, you know, like a Super League rugby model or something, where you have, like, you call them whatever you want, the Canadian Maple Leafs or whatever you want, and then they become the women's superpower in Canada, and they play teams from all over the world, and you have your Canadian players playing for them, and you have a generated revenue, and they go all over the world. You know, and like you said, these players are superstars. You know, particularly the women's team in the United States, you know, they are, you know, if you guys have time, I'll tell you a quick story. I was in Montreal for the 2015. I never forget this. I followed the Women's World Cup all over the Canada. 2015 Women's World Cup game. United States played Germany in Montreal. I think I've got the teams right. In the semifinal, we cover the game for TSN. And the United States are staying at the Sheraton, the same hotel as us, René Lévesque, Sheraton, downtown Montreal. So we get back and we get out of our car, and it honestly looks like One Direction is there, the band, right? So you name it, there's like thousands and thousands of teenage girls lining the streets all the way outside, like as we drive in, outside, looking at every car coming in. We get into the parking lot. Inside the hotel, we walk in, and there's a pathway, like a wide enough for two people to walk, thousands of them all the way there, all the way to the elevators.
Wow.
And I'm like, they're waiting for the team. So we got back, and as I went upstairs and started to get ready for the night, I hear the scream outside. It's like a boy band has just arrived. I'm like, I got to go down and see this. I have to see it with my own eyes. And obviously the bus has just arrived. And as I get down and open the elevator to reception, the three of the women's team come on, and I get out and just join in just to watch everything because I wanted to see it with my own eyes. That's what it had, the power of these girls. These girls all over from the United States, but obviously some from Canada as well. You know, the scene you mentioned, Alex Morgan, Kristen Press, all these girls are coming in. Yeah. You know, Carly Lloyd. These guys have got millions of Instagram followers connecting with these young girls, and they want to be like them, you know, and that's the power of the World Cup. That even watching that, I was like, the men's game in North America would never have any of that. And we can only dream of having that one day here in Canada.
Yeah, that's the point. Like, I was trying to, like, I guess it goes to culture. And, like, I've been here. I do whatever I can to help Canadian culture and soccer culture grow. Like, it feels like the women are advanced in that respect. To have that example is incredible. Just put a team here and they'll show up, you know?
Yeah, I agree, because they've had those reference points of success too, right? Because of what they were able to accomplish on the biggest stage in the Olympics, right?
And to be devil's advocate, they, like, some people would say, and some people listening are going to love me for this, some people are going to absolutely hate me for this, but to be honest, the reason some of their success, because, you know, my wife's Croatian, I'm like, where's the Croatian national team? Women's. Yeah. Women can't play. My father-in-law's like, women don't play soccer. He wouldn't let my wife, who ended up making a national team for lacrosse, like, amazing athlete, he wouldn't let her play soccer growing up because women don't play soccer. So I think part of that, like, there's so few. Canada's still been great. What Herdman did, like, I watched it. I was into it. I was yelling at my television. The way Japan won the World Cup against the Americans, I forget what year, but that was, like, that changed the way I saw everything. The way they played like Barcelona. I remember their last goal. They played through their back in their box against those crazy athletes on the American team. And I was like, this is amazing. This is amazing to watch. But, like, I think that's where they got their success. But to go with Steve's thing about the culture, like, do you hate our sports culture here in Canada? I know it's hard for you to say because you're a public figure, but, like, you can be diplomatic about it. But it's like, I hate it. I hate our hockey games. I think hockey, like, it's like, go Sens, go Leafs, go. We all have the same bloody song. And the fans are like fair weather fans. Like, some places like Montreal where it's like in depth, but they actually have a soccer culture where they go ole 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 when they sing, and that's electric, and they stole that from football, right? So when you're outside looking in, I know you're 20 years here, you're basically Canadian, but, like, do you like go, what's going on here? It's like a morgue at the Sens, you know, like, it's like there's 20,000 people and it sounds like a morgue. Like, what's your take on that?
I mean, it is different. Maybe I've got used to it. You know, it's a difficult one, really, because I do think, you know, and you are you guys all Canadian born and bred?
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, you've obviously got some background there in terms of relating to what happens elsewhere. You know, there is a definite ability to, in Europe, certainly in European soccer, when you go to the grounds, the highs are really high and the lows are really low, you know, and that explosion, and I'm sure some of you guys have all been there, that explosion of being in the stands when your team scores a goal is unmatched in sport and fandom. It's unmatched, you know, and that by the way, even better when you're in the away stand, when you're in the away game, that's even better. When you go away from home with your team and your team scores, that memories stay for your lifetime. When the entire ground, most of the entire ground, three quarters of the ground is silent and you're all going crazy, that's special. And that's something that's really difficult to get here. And my hope is one day that will come. You know, the Montreal-Toronto FC series of 2016 was very much like that. You know, one day, if I ever get time, I want to write a book about that. If I ever get time. That was something that stuck with me for a long time, because that was as close as it gets to that. But to answer your question, Jason, about the other sports, you know, like, there's an issue in the other sports in terms of the actual validity of the game you're watching at the time. So what I mean by that is when we watch Premier League games, and the English Premier League as an example, you know, it doesn't matter what your league of choice, the Bundesliga, La Liga, those European leagues are selling their fans and their consumers, rightly so, back to what's on the tin, on the fact that every game matters. Every game matters. So you go to a game in September and you're a, you know, Newcastle fan, you might think this is the matter. This is as good as it gets. Right? We need this win. We need to win this game against Brighton at home, because if we don't win this game, we might get relegated. Yeah. And that might be in another 8 months, but we have to win this game today.
Yeah.
And the problem with sports in North America is that there's far too many games that don't mean anything. And so they become a night out. And even the most passionate fan of any sport, of any team, will go to that night and they'll go, I really want to win this. But if they don't win, when they leave their seat and they go back to their car or they go back to the train, deep down, they'll be like, oh, that's okay. We'll get them next time. But they don't. You can't have that in high competitive soccer in Europe. Yeah. And that's the thing that that's the biggest thing that I'm concerned about with Major League Soccer.
That's
the biggest thing I'm concerned about Major League Soccer, that every game has to matter. And they've got to find a way to get to that point next. And whether that becomes promotion or relegation, which I'm a big advocate of that they're not, whatever they have to do, split seasons, two seasons, less playoff team, whatever it takes, they cannot allow complacency to drown their league. And if they do, it'll die, or it'll become a very boring league that nobody will ever take seriously as being a top five league in the world.
Yeah. Can I give my suggestion? Because you're so high up there, this might go there, and if it gets it, I'll take 10% of whatever happens.
Who's high up? You talking to Mark or Steven?
Yeah. So what about this? What about, and no NHL fan will go for this, I can't even believe I'm talking to NHL with you because I hate the NHL, but it's do the regular league. The winner of the league wins the league. That's the that's equivalent to Stanley Cup. The Stanley Cup becomes like an FA Cup, and get those OHL teams in there, and it becomes like an FA Cup type deal where Ottawa is playing like Birmingham or City or not Birmingham, what, Binghamton or whatever.
Binghamton Devils. Yeah.
They play them or something. You know what I mean? And that's like a side cup, and then the Stanley Cup becomes that, and that's like a. You know, like equivalent to the FA Cup, but otherwise, like you come eighth and you get rewarded because you can rest your players and you don't really care. And like, how many teams that come in eighth have done well in the Stanley Cup playoffs? Like, it's mental to me. What's the point of winning the league? What is the point?
Well, it's back to, I mean, like I said, it's back to my point earlier. You know, I really like the hockey. I really like a lot of North American sports. But you know, what really got my attention when I first moved here was that. For me, I almost considered the regular season as preseason, because that playoff hockey is playoff hockey. You turn playoff hockey on, and it's like watching a different sport. Yeah. Like, you've been watching 82 games of this for 7-6 months. What's the sport now? This is the sport. Okay, now you're interested. Now you're going to go out there and you're going to put your body on that. That's what I want to see every night.
Yeah.
But they don't put. But during the regular season, it's just not ingrained in people, and yet people. Are still paying, you know, hundreds and hundreds of dollars to watch these games that they, you know, it's strange, but it's a different culture. You know, when I go to sporting events, like maybe I'm a bit more romantic, but I want to go there and remember them, you know, and that's the key. And that, I think it's the biggest thing that all governing bodies of every sport around the world are talking about right now. Doesn't matter what your sport of choice is, cricket's going through it, rugby's going through it, is that we cannot have these, you call them what you want, exhibition friendly games anymore. That's why the Nations League was developed. It's everybody's got, we have to tell people why these matter. We have to have a meaning, a reason why these games are being played. Otherwise, people are going to say, no, I'm not going to that. I'm just going to stay at home and watch something on TV or play on the PlayStation with my kids.
Yeah.
It's not, for me, it's like, I mean, that's probably the best answer I've ever heard in in that respect. But it's, do you think too, here, given our access to every game on TV. I mean, in England, Europe, I mean, they're not shown this much, so they're almost forced to go to the stadiums and be part of that, or pubs, to have like this culture of doing things together and celebrating. Here, it's like, you don't need to leave your couch. You can watch anything, anytime, ever. I mean, that's, to me, that's got to play some sort of part on how we're just used to sitting on the couch watching the TV with like a dumb look on our face, right? It's like, and then we go to the stadium and it's like, we're doing the same thing, you know? It's like, oh yeah, I'm here.
Yeah. It's a good point, and I think more and more the generation behind us will think that more and more as well. You know, why do I have to go get in my car and drive downtown and sit in traffic for 50 minutes and find a parking spot that costs me $35 to then walk and go line up 45 minutes to get into the stadium to go and go sit and watch it in there? And then, you know what, you know, people are, you got to give people reasons to go. Now, people like me will always go. You know, I love watching things that I can't see on television. I love being able to go and say, I want to go, no matter what sport it is, I want to go watch that player. You know, I don't always follow the puck or don't always follow the ball. Watch what's going on around that to see whether you can, how you evaluate that. But I don't think that I'm in the majority. And I think what you said, Mark, is a really good point, even more so in now where you've taken people away from that with COVID. You know, how much have they missed it? Is there going to be an enormous bounce back because people are dying to get back, or people become more used to it and they're more reserved to go back? It's going to be a challenge for professional sports teams, particularly even ones in Major League Soccer, to try and get people back in the seats.
Yeah, about streaming too. Does that, I mean, the TSN's lost the Champions League and that kind of thing, you know, like one soccer's now got Canada and two soccer's got this and blue soccer's got this. I mean, who know, all these million apps going around.
It's tough to keep up, huh?
Yeah. I mean, you got to be a multimillionaire to have all these apps and watch sport. But it's like, does that hurt TSN? Like, is TSN in danger with all these apps going on, or is it, do you have to evolve, or what's going on with this? This is crazy.
I can't talk for TSN. I can only talk for me. You know, as a fan, I still think it's important that the game is in front of as many eyeballs as possible. You know, I think that the game is a really crucial part in the development in this country with the next generation. And, you know, when I started at TSN, like, as I can say, I can just give facts. When I started at TSN, we would have Champions League on a Tuesday, Champions League on a Wednesday, Europa League on a Thursday, Premier League on a Saturday, Major League Soccer on a Saturday and a Sunday, and then go again and sometimes, you know, keep going. And there was live wall-to-wall games all the time. And, you know, I felt like we did a decent enough job of that to try and do that. And then, you know, for me, there was great pleasure when I would hear that kids would come home from school and then they'd run and they'd turn on the TV because they want to watch Messi and Ronaldo, you know. And now I think of those children and those kids that I know from my kids' schools that their parents aren't into soccer. And they only had those because their parents had the sports channels. And now they're not buying those specific apps that you mentioned. Yeah. So those kids can't watch those players play live anymore. Now, some kids would say, okay, it's fine. I follow them on Instagram and I see the highlights. And, oh, did you see Ronaldo's goal and all that stuff? And that's fine for some of them. But for some of them that really want to have a true love relationship with the sport, whether it be something that they end up going on to play at a high level or, much like yourselves, really get involved in the game, I think there's no substitute for watching, you know, live games. And highlight packages are distorted, they're favored into certain areas. You can't generate your own opinions. It's opinions that the person wants you to see in the first place. So it's sad from that regard. I understand the economic landscape of where things are going, and that if people want to cut their cord and go watch those things, that they can still do that. But as I said, that's my own take on something that's in my own time, short time here in the last 5 or 6 years, is as you said, has already altered significantly. Now, it might spike back, but who knows? That's where we are right now in 2020.
We tried, Christian, to give Vic crap about putting curling on over the Champions League. He had such a great answer. It was hard to beat him. He's got the ratings and rankings and all those numbers.
Oh, yeah, you can't beat the curling.
No, but at the end of the day, get it off. Get it off.
Yeah.
Make the final, curling.
Yeah, now. So the Champions League can come on.
Yeah, I know. I get it.
So, looks like he's gone. I got a cheesy question that's that maybe, I don't know, whatever, people can laugh at, but I like to know, like, what made you fall in love with the game? Like, I know you're from England and it's culture and you probably, I don't know, family and all that kind of stuff, but, like, what was it like? Did you go to a Villa game and as a six-year-old? Like, you're so passionate about it. You can see it. It comes through the screen. Like, that is what I'm going to take credit. I'm going to say I told these guys about you, like, 15 years ago. But you're genuine, and that's what I buy from you, and I don't care if you coach Barcelona or AC Milan. Like, I buy you because you're genuine. You never tried to BS me on the screen or whatever. So, but like, what was it? What got you when you were younger?
I don't know, really. I mean, I think obviously Villa played a big part in that. I remember my first game at Villa Park when I was 8 or 9 against Norwich. That is really exciting. And I love the tactical side of the game, so I would never just watch the ball, you know. I would always watch other things. And I remember going to a game against Nottingham Forest, actually. I think I was 11, and this young Irish midfielder sprinted from midfield and lobbed the goalkeeper after 6 minutes. And I couldn't take my eyes off him. I'm like, this player's a good player. And I said, and then my dad always says, you know, you had an eye for a player very early, and that player was Roy Keane. You know, Nottingham Forest after 6 minutes. And I couldn't stop watching him. So, you know, for me, there's a lot of things about the game that I just loved from a very early part. You know, I love the ability that, you know, it's nothing, you know, the collectiveness, the shape, the system, how you help people out and all that stuff. That fascinated me from a very early part of it. And some people look at it very differently. Some people don't want to turn their brain on when they watch sports.
Yeah.
And I completely get that. But I could never turn it off. So, but you know, for me, it was like an education when I went, and it wasn't just football, but other sports. I just couldn't wait to just learn more and be obsessed by it very early. And, you know, I learned, unfortunately, from pretty early age that I was never going to make it. So yeah. I was like, all right, what else can I do? And then this is what I tried to do. And I've been blessed, you know, God willing, I'm still here today talking about it. I never thought I would get this position. It kind of found me. I never really had a desire to be on television. I had a journalistic background. I enjoyed writing about sports. Then I come to Canada, and some of you may know this, but I worked at The Score on Sports World, and we did rugby and we did cricket and all of that stuff. And that was my wheelhouse too, because I'm very comfortable with all of those sports. But I could see right away there was an insatiable passion for soccer in this country that was going fast. And I thought, okay, I'm going to try and get on this and help it a little bit. And so far, so good, I suppose.
Yeah.
So
I want to ask you something. Hold on, Mark. Sorry, I'm killing
my
you.
My back? Did I disappear?
Yeah, you disappeared. You just ruined this whole podcast now. This is going to get the worst ratings ever. I want to ask Mark and Jay this, Christian, and then I want you to answer it. I'm curious to know their question. What position do we think Christian played when he played? What was he?
God. Right can back.
That's a terrible answer. That means you think he's crap. The Sunday League right back. Like, no. Jay, you answer.
I don't know, because like your analysis is like so fun to listen to, and I love the way you break it down simply. Like Einstein said, you can explain it to a 6-year-old. It shows that you truly understand, you know?
That's true.
I want to say, and I want to be right, I want to say like...
You're going to say a six.
Center back or in the middle. Like you had some say in the game, because obviously you have the gift of the gab. Like you had to have some sort of...
Yeah. I say six, too.
In, like, organizing.
Yeah, actually, I did play at centre-back, really, and then I wasn't ready at all. So, yeah. Although the gift of the gab stuff is very different. So, I wasn't really much of a communicator. So, yeah. I mean, it's funny because I talk for a living, but I don't consider myself a talker, if you know what I mean. Yeah. I've kind of put in that position. So, I really enjoy talking about the game, but in my own life, like I, you know, the old adage, you were given 2 ears, 1 mouth, like use it twice to listen more. So I really just enjoy listening to people, to be honest. I'd much kind of like sit here and just listen to you guys, to be honest. That's what, you know, and I'm doing a lot of talking here, but I wasn't really much of a communicator pushing my own ideas on that. But yeah, it's as a center back, it was really fun to kind of watch the game that way and break it down.
Well, I'm not sure how many derbies you played in, but we threw this question out to our listeners last show, but I want to hear yours other than Villa Birmingham, or maybe, you know what, maybe that's one. What are the 3 best derbies in the world?
Wow. Three best derbies in the world. What a question that is. You're going to annoy people, aren't you? No matter what. Right.
Yeah.
You know what? The first thing I say here too is maybe this is a question for you guys. What's a derby? You know, Barcelona Real Madrid's not really a derby, is it?
That's funny. We got a couple of those questions. Some people contacted me after our question and said a derby should only be local in a city, right? That's like technically what it is. But flip side, I mean, like Barca Real, United, Liverpool, like, you know, those are as big as, or if not bigger than some, right? I don't know.
Yeah. Oh, for sure they are. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. I think...
Yeah, but is it a true derby? That's a great.
Like, what's a true derby? You know, like I think this, like Boca Juniors River Plate's a derby,
yes.
Right?
That's the one. Yeah.
What is it? Super Classico. That's a derby, right? That's
Celtic
one of
Rangers.
The Celtic Rangers is a derby.
Liverpool.
You know, Liverpool Man United isn't a derby, but it's the biggest fixture in England. Like they despise each other.
Yeah.
So like maybe that's the rivalry instead of the derby word you use. You know what I mean? Like that's the biggest game. Like Liverpool play Everton and it's a big game, but come on, are Liverpool really bothered about playing Everton? No, it's Man United. Like Man United play Man City, and still to this day it's okay, well, we'll play Man City, they're the best team now, but they still annoy us. But you know, it's like the little brother that grew bigger than them, but he's still my little brother. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's Liverpool Man United, right? So for me, that's another one. And I guess people would say Barcelona, Real Madrid. Real Madrid will be like, well, Atletico is a good derby, but
yeah.
I mean, we beat them twice in the Champions League final and crushed their dreams. It's no fun for us anymore. We just want to play Barcelona.
Yeah.
So maybe that's a long-winded answer, but I think I got there in the end.
It was brilliant because it was like a very soccer snob answer too. Like, what's a derby? Yeah. Like,
I love it. I love it.
Yeah. Look, Steve and I went to Liverpool Man U in the Kop. We paid paid a lot for it. It was his 40th. We went with some buddies, and we were there singing the whole time. Steve lost his voice like a little schoolgirl.
Are you both Liverpool fans?
Yeah.
Yes.
No, we don't need any comments, I don't think, from recent history with you.
No, that's fine. I'll leave that alone.
And so we were there. That's when Mourinho was coaching them. We paid all that money, 0-0.
Yeah, I remember.
0-0. Gutted. Mark laughs. Oh, it killed me. I was like,
love it.
Oh, it rocked my world. Like, we paid so much money for those tickets. The experience was amazing. We were singing the entire time.
Yeah.
Like, like legends. But 0-0, Mourinho.
Don't be gutted. You could have lost. That would have been worse.
Yeah, I know. But we met Giggs, and Steve almost met Gerard.
Oh, really?
The same weekend, yeah. So it was massive, yeah.
So if you two are Liverpool fans, what fan are you, Mark?
This is like the most loaded question in the world, only because it's such a Canadian, such a Canadian thing where my generation, when I started watching the game and it was on TV, that's when Ferguson had kind of just started turning the corner. They were on TV. They were it. That's it for me. That's how in Canada, that's really how it works.
You are Man United.
Yeah,
I am Man United. Yeah, I mean,
you guys secondly are still friends.
Yeah, that's why we do this on Zoom and not in person, because it can get dangerous.
This is therapy.
But speaking of a commonality in terms of teams, the Canadian national team.
Yeah,
are we on the right path now with Herdman? I mean, he seems to be able to create chemistry from absolutely anything, and I'm excited. Were you hesitant with a coach? I know it's not in any way putting down the women's game, but it's just a jump from the women's game to the men's game, or a men's coach going to the women's game. Same thing. I would ask the same question, but were you nervous when he kind of took over?
Nervous isn't the right word. I understand what you mean. I think there's obviously, it's funny because when I first heard about it, I was like, first call I heard made, I called to TSN. I'm like, in 30 minutes, this news is about to drop. Let's get ready. And they're like, what? Like, it just shook the football world. Like, this just doesn't happen in any country, right?
Yeah.
But to his credit, he's got the players buying in pretty quickly.
Big time.
And to answer your question, I think they are on the – I mean, it's probably the most important decade of the history of Canadian soccer, the men's game coming up, because of where we are with the players we're producing – 2026 hosting World Cup in our country and the Canadian Premier League being launched. If this decade doesn't fire start something for future generations, then I don't know what ever will. You know, that's the key. You know, there's so much there to get behind. But back to our women's point earlier, you need success as well. And the men's team need to have success.
Yeah.
And, you know, when we get back playing games, the qualifying process isn't going to be easy, but they have to get into that octagonal now that's now been announced instead of the six. Yeah. They have to get into that final CONCACAF round. I think that's a minimum requirement. I think everybody within the CSA would admit the same thing internally, whether they've said that publicly or not. I don't think they have yet, but they have to get into that. And then they have to embrace the journey. And people would say, let's get to Qatar 2022. And that would be great, but they have to play those games. They have to go to places like Panama, and they have to go to places like Honduras, and they have to suffer.
Yeah.
And they have to figure out how are you gonna get through that? How are you gonna come through difficult times and face that adversity and that hostility that comes with those games? And then you grow. whoa, this is what it takes. And if you don't come through that with success, but you still come through it with the experience, then the journey is important. So then next time, I know they're going to get to 2026 as a host anyway, but the next time you play those games in Gold Cup environments and those tough cultures, you've learned and you've created tougher players. And I think that's really, really important that this process and this journey under John Herdman at least gets to that. It's absolutely vital.
Can I just say, I think you could be a coach. I want to rip my sweater off and have a Canada jersey underneath. When you said suffer in Honduras, I was on the plane. I was going to suffer. I'm like, I'll do it, Christian. I'll suffer. I'll play right back for you. Like, just put me in. Yeah. That's brilliant. It is such a good point, though. Like, we, I'm sure you've listened to every single one of our shows, but we had Alex Bunbury on.
Right, great.
Yeah, and he was fascinating to listen to, the pride he had for playing for Canada. He made a point that I took from it about, and I think it's what we're doing now, and it speaks to what you were saying about where we're at with the players we have. He was saying, and the States, I have to say, are at this point too, and they've obviously had a little more success than us for sure, that North American-wise, we haven't produced a lot of game breakers. You know, the real geniuses who unlock a defense and you can sit between lines and stuff like that. I thought it was a great, great point. And if you look at the Jonathan Davies and you look at the Alfonso Davies and all the Davies that apparently exist on the David.
Yeah, I get it.
I just kept saying Davies, for God's sake. But you've got those game breakers that we haven't had necessarily in a while. You've kind of had like a lot of robotic type players, North American players that are very functional, do their jobs. Goalkeepers for sure have always been successful through North America.
Yeah.
And if you look at the States, and I don't want to talk about them at all, but really, like, what a generation they've got. They've got players at Barcelona. They've got players in Dortmund. They've got Pulisic, who, like, I have to like him. I don't want to like him, but I love him. So, to Bunbury's point, like, both countries even, but we'll stick to Canada, we have those guys now. Like, we have to succeed at this point.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, and ultimately, those players, you know, are going for millions of dollars. And Jonathan David, just, you know, Ottawa connection.
Yeah,
you know, to go for that amount of money and was only playing in your city less than 3 years ago and wasn't even playing a professional contract is a remarkable story. And
incredible.
A good thing, and he's such a good guy, too. You know, it's really nice to root for that. And I think now they're playing in those environments that has to translate to the success of the Canadian team because they are, you know, Alfonso Davies is accepted at Bayern Munich now as being a difference maker, to your point. He's a difference maker in that culture. Yeah. So if Robert Lewandowski and Thomas Muller have trusted him and those guys can trust him as well, how can he not look at that and say, well, when I went to Bayern Munich, I was a nobody.
Yeah.
So now I need to be Robert Lewandowski when I'm the Canadian men's national team. Now that will only come with maturity. Right now he's a young kid and he might not get that right away. That's Herdman's job, not mine. But that's a massive job to make sure that when he comes back, that he isn't coming late for training and he isn't doing what he wants to do, that he comes in and he goes, I'm Robert Lewandowski in this team and I'm going to take my next young protege and I'm going to say, I'm Alfonso Davies, European Champion League winner. And I'm going to look at you and go, I need you on my team.
Yeah.
And you're going to need to do this for me. And then the culture and the standards raise higher and higher and higher. And that translate. If you get a black guy coming from Bayern Munich, how can that not help Canadian soccer? It's massive, right? So.
Yep. Yeah, so speaking of Alfonso Davies and his rapid pace, we're going to hit you with some rapid fire now.
What a
rapid fire. How was that transition in the media world? Was that all right?
That was terrific.
Was it? Yeah. Perfect. Yeah. Going to sleep well tonight.
You can come and host next week's show with me.
Done. Anytime I'm in. How many soccer fantasy pools are you in right now?
I don't think I'm in any. I did Fantasy Premier League this year for charity. So maybe that counts as one. I signed a team up for that. Although I am a big fantasy player, I'm a huge fantasy baseball player. I've done in dynasty leagues for a long time.
Wow.
And the Fantasy Premier League, I did it, but I don't like the idea that like 25 people in a league of 30 can have Mo Salah or Aubameyang.
Yeah, exactly.
Or Aubameyang's a midfielder.
Yeah, it makes no sense.
Yeah. I'm like, so for me, the best drafts, like if you ever want to create one and make money or whatever, if you guys can invite me next year, the best drafts are like one guy gets that one player.
That's right.
So like De Bruyne, yeah. You get De Bruyne, I get Salah, whatever, let's move on. And so like, what's the point of having a good week if you've got, oh yeah, I've got Mo Salah as my captain, then 25 other guys have got him as well.
Exactly. Very good. The best stadium you've ever been to?
Aside from Villa Park?
Hey, it counts if you want to say it. It counts.
You know what? I like to your credit, to Villa's credit. I've heard a lot. Like I listened to a lot of Liverpool podcasts before the 7-2, especially, and they've mentioned that ground in particular. Yeah. It stood out for them as a neutral place to go. So
it's the best, man. It's the best stadium for me. Yeah. It's got everything about it. But the best grounds I've been to, the new camp's really special. I probably say that as well as that. You know. That was great for me, just to go there, watch Messi and Xavi is my favorite player of all time. So just to go watch Xavi from Barcelona play. And I tell the story all the time. I went to watch Messi play and I spent the entire match staring at Xavi. So that was my guy. And I love that. You know, the Azteca was great in Mexico when I went there with Champions League with TFC. Because the history was still there as well. So it was exactly the same almost as when Maradona played England in 86. When you walk down the tunnel and you walk up, it's all the same as, you know, we got a police escort and then you walk down the tunnel. We've got flags of every team to ever play there. And you just, the smell of the tunnel when you walk down there, the history of that place in Mexico was great as well. So there's three for you.
Yeah, flip it. What's the worst stadium?
Wow, I've been to some terrible stadiums. I mean, I covered Unibon Premier League games in my first stint as a journalist in the UK. So the Unibon Premier League was like, you know, you've got the four professional leagues in England, the 92 clubs. Yeah. Then you've got the other league under that. And then you get another league, and that's where they were. So I've been to some – I went to Colwyn Bay once, which is like Wales, an area of Wales. And I went to their stadium. It was literally in a field. That was – I don't know how they even charge people to get in, but that's certainly one that comes to mind as being a pretty poor stadium and some cold weather games there as well, for sure.
Oh, and Freddie Adu just signed with a club.
Did he?
Today or yesterday. Do you know what country?
Oh, my goodness. This guy's been all around the world, huh? Yeah. Can you give me the continent? Is it in Europe?
Scandinavia.
Oh, Scandinavia. You broke it down even more. Yeah. I love that. I love that part of the world. Some of my favorite parts. Let's go with Norway.
Ooh, Sweden. Swedish third division. He's back. He is back, America. Who are you more partial to? The English national team or Canadian national team?
I think it's pretty easy. Canada. I mean, for me, the English national team has become... See, I'm a fan, but I'm also someone who works. So I've covered English national team now for World Cups and Euros for a considerable amount of time. And of course, it's my background. Of course, I know the players well. And when we're in the studio and we did 200 hours of FIFA World Cup games, and we did 200 hours in a month of live TV, we have some fun when it's England with me, Stevie, and Luke. That was great. Yeah. But when the cameras turn on, it's just another team. You know, it really is. You know, you want them to do well. You want them to win a World Cup, but you just, when you do the job that I do and you've got a book of preparation and you prepare for watching these teams for a World Cup, and if you respect the audience, we have to in this great country, you know, 32 countries were in that World Cup and I had to learn all of them and respect all of them. And the great thing about this country, guys, is that when we did that tournament, I knew there was fans from those countries across the country, everybody, you name the team, the country, you name it, whoever it was, Panama, you name it, Australia. We knew that in this great country of Canada, people were watching it because they were from that country. And we had to know as much, if not more than them. So England just became a bit of a job for me. Canada right now is because, of course, it's become a job and I have to give, you know, analysis on the club. But back to what we were saying before, there's genuine enthusiasm for them to really, really do well.
Nice.
What position will Villa finish this year?
I'm going to go with 10th. Top 10. Okay. Yeah. I'm excited. I like what we've got. Watkins is a massive addition. We've got a striker who makes proper runs in the channels and can link with Grealish. McGinn, a full season of him being fit, good goalkeeper. good right back in Matty Cash with the addition of him.
Yeah.
Barkley's come over. I'm not a big Barkley fan, but at that level, he'd be fine. So
some debut.
Yeah, exactly. So look, I think we're going to have some difficult days ahead as well, defensively a little bit, but you know, there's that 10th to 16th group in the Premier League every year where the gap is like 4 or 5 points. I think we can be in that gap, hopefully.
Which Villa player is the next one to go to a big club?
Probably Jack Grealish, I think. Yeah. Although I've been a little bit less bullish on him than most. Mm-hmm. You know, I understand the hype. And when he played for England, the hype got higher, which I think is a little bit backwards thinking. International football is a long way behind club football now. So I kind of smile when he was on the back pages of England, the England papers last week for having a good performance in a friendly against Wales with nobody there. Like, big deal. Like, the guy was man of the match against the best team in the world in England, in Liverpool, and absolutely dominated him. Like, if you can perform against Liverpool, you can play really well against Wales.
That's right.
So, you know, but I think Grealish will probably move eventually. As I said, I think he needs to stay on his feet a little bit more. He goes down too much. And that, I don't mean that because of people don't want him to go on the floor. I just think for Villa's point of view, they need him up. Villa are not that good from set pieces, so it was always ridiculous to see him go down as many times as they did. But when he's got his head up and he can play the passes, I think he will go. If not him, Douglas Luiz is a really good player. He's playing for Brazil now. The kind of player who's got fit after lockdown and really can run a midfield.
Yeah.
I think Man City have a buyback, which is a bit of a disaster for Villa because they may take that up.
Yeah.
This is a big one on our show. We talk about this a lot. We joke about it a lot. And you're going to see Jay's ears perk up here. Is Sean Dyche a good manager?
Oh, I thought you were going to ask me about Taco Bell. I think he is a good manager. Yeah, I do. You know, I think that the amount that he gets out of what he has is very little. He's pretty amazing. And the other thing he is he's very, very tolerant. Like, you know, he doesn't really lose his mind much. You know, he had that bit with the owner last time after the lockdown when they let the players go before the contracts were run out. I think they're getting relegated this year. I picked him to go down. I just don't think that he can perform it anymore. And I think he's overstayed his welcome. And I think that he may resign or he may sink with the ship. I don't know. But I do think he's a very good manager at Burnley. I'm not saying that he could go on and manage an Everton or a Leicester to a really high level, but it's nice to see some kind of stability in a very unstable world that he stayed there so long.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And my next staple question I'm asking the guests every week, did you watch Tiger King?
I haven't seen a minute of it, no.
No?
No. Okay. I did not watch Tiger King.
Good for you.
I still don't really know anything about it.
Probably a good choice. Probably a good choice. You three? Well, you know what? Now you got to watch it and come back.
we watched it. I got totally hooked on it. And like, it's like you're watching smut TV, but you get more popcorn, you keep watching.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's hard to stop watching.
I didn't watch it at all. Was it pretty difficult to watch? I heard at some parts. No.
Yeah, it is. It's, I don't know what to say. Like, there's three people that listen to this podcast, so I won't get in any trouble, but it's very Americana of like, there's people that are like, not just him, but that whole show. It's just blows you away culturally.
Right. No, I didn't see it. Sorry, boys.
It's a car crash where you start it and you have to finish it. Like, it's just, it's one of those, you just can't look away.
I'll make sure I don't stop it then. How about that?
Done. Would you rather go up for a header against DeVos or Caldwell?
They're a good question.
I got no chance of beating them for headers. I don't think I'd even attempt it. Like, you're talking about two of the best defensive headers of a ball to step foot in Canada. So, I don't think I'd ever go up for it. I've actually played with both of them as well in charity games and stuff. So, if I had to ask, but I wouldn't bother. But I wouldn't even bother, to be honest.
Okay,
maybe I'll go up with Jace because I just feel like maybe Stevie would hurt me.
So I'll give you an easier one. Go up for a header against Kelsey Brady or Luke Wildman.
Oh, Wildman for sure. That's an easy one. Like, he's a wimp. So, I mean, Kelsey, I don't really know. I've never seen him on the soccer field, so. But no, Wildman, I'll rise above him anytime. Fine.
Yeah. Who would you rather Villa sign? Harry Maguire or John Stones?
John Stones.
Thank you.
Is Maguire a good soccer player? Can we be honest about this? Is he's not, I mean, okay, I'll let you go.
I think Maguire's a decent player. I think what you get in Maguire right now is a syndrome where he's probably playing a little bit over his head. He's the captain of Manchester United.
Yeah.
He's not good enough to play for that level when he actually is at Man United level, if you know what I mean. So their level is fifth or sixth in the Premier League. Occasionally you look brilliant and occasionally you lose to Crystal Palace. That's his level. But the expectations are, because of the shirt, the colour and the badge, that he should be better. So I think he's fine. I actually think he's better than John Stones, but I'd rather have John Stones because I think that Maguire is who he is. I think Stones is not Manchester City caliber, but I think if he played for a team, the next team that signs him with a good coach, you could turn that player into somebody better than Maguire now.
Yeah.
Would you rather walk into a Celtic pub wearing a Rangers top or fly from Toronto to Tokyo sandwiched between TSN's Jay and Dan?
Oh, the second one for sure. Second one for sure. First of all, because Tokyo is one of the places in the world that I really want to go that I've never been.
Okay.
So that's a definite for me. Jay and Dan are, second of all, I should say, when I go on planes, I wear headphones. So that's fine. all the time, headphones on, even when I give the boarding pass. So that would be fine. And the first one, I wouldn't come out alive. So the second one, at least I get to Tokyo and, you know, I might, you know, have a few stories. So
yeah, fair enough. So from this silliness, we usually hit just a quick serious note here for you, Christian. All of us at home watching on TV, we all believe we're experts, you know. We all believe we could manage Man United and do all this good stuff. And we all think we're the best. But that's what being a fan is, right?
Right.
But with you, your analysis, your knowledge, like, you really have us snobs in tune. And I can't express that enough, that you are a great voice for Canadian soccer, coming from three of the biggest snobs in the world.
Thanks, boys.
And what people need to understand in my, you know, short stint as a host here is the preparation that you must do and have to do for your job is kind of like a coaching parallel, where the game, standing at the sidelines of a game, is easy. It's what you do beforehand, and the hours and hours of work that nobody sees is the stuff that, you know, that makes you who you are, I'm sure. So thank you for coming on here and talking to us idiots about soccer. So we thank you.
I really appreciate that. You know, it's it means a lot to hear from you guys, honestly. You know, it's you know, I just do the work that I can because of people like you guys. You know, because of the I have a tremendous amount of respect for the game and for the people in this country that love it. And I remember when, to tell a quick story to finish, when I first started at TSN, we got pulled into our office by one of our managers at that point, and he tried to say to us that our analysis was a bit too technical and a bit too high end. And, you know, their example was, what about the soccer moms? You know, how are they going to relate to what you're saying? And I understood it, and I had a long think about it. And my thought overall was that I want to aim for guys like you. And so if I aim for guys like you, the others will catch up. If I aim for the other ones, you guys will leave me. So that's the key. So if I have to aim for people like you guys, who watch the games at such a high level and know the sport, and if I get the respect from you guys, honestly, it made my week. It means a lot, because then I'm doing my job, hopefully, to the best that I can do it. And I think that if I can play a tiny role in pushing Canada forward, then that's, you know, the soccer culture forward. That's what we need to do, because we can't just talk about things. Otherwise, I'm from a low end. Otherwise, I'm just another fanboy in a suit, right?
Amazing. I could.
I'm sure we could talk for hours. I need to ask before we go, Mark. Give me a book, a soccer book. I need to read. Give me a book. Yes.
What do we still have the quiz to do. Don't forget, we always have a quiz.
I got a lot behind me right here.
That's what I'm looking at. Like,
what do you like? It depends what you're into.
I don't know. I said soccer. If you have another one, the one I recommended a few weeks back is Legacy about the All Blacks. I don't know if you've heard of
that. Yeah, I've read that. Yeah,
that's my ilk.
That's my wheelhouse, sports management and leadership stuff.
Yeah, me
too. I love that stuff.
Yeah,
me too. My favorite. I got Phil Jackson's book that I'm reading right now, actually. Yeah, so 11 Rings. I'm reading that right now. And so I've been reading that stuff. I want to get Wenger's book. It just came out. So that will be something that I want to read as well. Have you read Carlo Ancelotti's book, Quiet Leadership?
No, I'd love to read about him, actually.
Yeah. So it's actually, it's written by him, but also about him, about leadership. So that's on my bookshelf. I would recommend that for sure. That's one of my favorites. On that note, one of my very favorite books of all time is a book just called Spain by Graham Hunter.
Hunter, yeah.
Grab it 1 second.
Yeah.
So it's this book here. It's called Spain. Yeah. The inside story of La Roja's historic treble around the 2008 Euros, 2010 World Cup, and 2012 Euros.
Yeah.
Which I have a soft spot for this team because I was doing those tournaments as well.
Yeah.
And then the amount of inside information that you get in here from people who really live with it. And I got a lot of time for guys like real winners like Casillas and Fabregas. Yeah. I said earlier, Xavi's my favorite player. Iniesta, an artist, right?
Yeah.
So
that
generation of players, that's an outstanding book as well. And trying to read and consume as much as you can.
That's amazing. I'm going to give you one that Mark pulled out that I thought was I have to give Mark credit, even though he's a Man U fan. It was a great call. And Jason, I still think, hasn't driven to his house to get it. Have you read The Miracle of Castel De Sangro?
No, I haven't.
Christian.
If I'm going to recommend a book to you, it's that. Now, it's not leadership, it's not legacy, but it's about an American reporter, journalist who goes to Castel De Sangro in Italy. They're like a Serie C team and spends a year there. Just a fascinating read.
Right, yeah. I love that stuff.
Yeah.
Highly recommended. When you have to pick it up, and when you do, send us an email when it's done, just so we know, and we're going to get you on for 10 minutes to talk about it.
Maybe I'll just drive to Ottawa to pick it up from you boys.
You know what? Just move. Yeah. Yeah. So we're going to end with a quiz. We always end with a quiz.
Uh-oh.
It's a competition between you three. Okay. I think you've got a leg up, though. I think you've got a leg up, Christian. So I'm going to get Jay to go first because he keeps prices writing everybody and just going one number or one number below.
30.
So I'm going to start with Jay. It's a simple math question.
Who's next, Mark? Who's second? I need to know this. It's important.
I'm going to get Christian to go last because he's probably going to nail it.
Okay.
It's a math question. Club goals from Jason DeVos plus the club goals from Stephen Caldwell.
Oh my God.
The total goals for them from their club. This is a club career.
36.
Steve?
I'm going to go 24.
Christian?
Wow. Still think it's that many. Stevie doesn't score that many goals. Jason DeVos probably got more. You guys are pretty good numbers. I'll probably take, 19?
Oh, wow. You went low. Jason DeVos has 35 club goals in his career. Yeah. Wow. Don't forget, he played in Scotland, so that's scoring. Yeah. Wow. But, and Stephen Caldwell has 13. So it's 48 total.
Wow, that's impressive. Well done, guys.
Yeah. So
why don't you now 2-1?
Oh, yeah. That was 36, Jay. You said 36, right?
I said 30. Did I say 35 or 36? Either one. 36. I won.
Yeah, I wrote it down.
You won, Jason. You're
one back.
Thank you. I needed that because I'm losing.
Yeah.
You can't just not even announce who wins. It's horrible.
Yeah, I know.
Christian was talking about. This means something. Everyone
does.
Something.
Does.
Did Vic win last week?
No. I asked Vic, how much did a brand new curling stone cost?
Oh, okay.
What do you think?
I couldn't tell you. No idea.
$450.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, crazy.
What are those things made of? Gold?
I know.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's it. We're going to thank Christian again, but we're going to sign off in our normal, really awkward, no end. We need an exit strategy here to end our shows. They're always terrible, you know?
You don't need any kind of structure. This is, these are the best kind of shows.
And there we go. Perfect. Right?
Structure's when, like, we're on air and I got a guy telling me 10, 9, 8. Yeah, you know, that's right. You don't need that.
You know, you can hire Jay to do his finger countdown for you. It's really good. Helps me.
I noticed that. He does it better than anybody else.
Yeah. Yeah. So thank you. Thanks. I appreciate it, man.
Thanks, Christian.
Thanks very much for listening today. If you haven't already, please subscribe to the podcast and, of course, leave us a 5-star review. If you want to get in touch, you'll find us on Instagram at SoccerSnob1, on Twitter at SoccerSnobs1, by searching for us on Facebook, and of course on the web at www.soccersnobs.ca/listen. You can leave us your opinion, give us any comments, and if that's where you want to get nasty, feel free to do so.